have that thing, that craving, that special food item that we would go on an epic quest for. But I have good news if that thing for you is coffee. You'll never have to ride on the back of a cheetah again. All you have to do is switch to Sparkplug Coffee. Sparkplug starts with premium Arabica beans. It's always fair trade. They offer a variety of blends and roasts to suit any taste. But the best part is that Sparkplug delivers this delicious coffee to you in Canada or the US within 1 week of custom roasting it so that it always reaches you guaranteed fresh and you will taste the difference. You can order Sparkplug as you need it, or you can join the Autopilot Coffee Club for regular deliveries and never worry about leaving your house for coffee again. And because you're a top 100 listener, Sparkplug is giving you 20% off your next coffee order. Just use the promo code TOP100PROJECT at checkout, and that's all one word with the number 100. Plug yourself in at sparkplugcoffee.com.
But I want to ride a cheetah with very bad CGI. Also, you didn't do that. Nearly stoned enough.
I'll do another take that'll take twice as long.
Top 100 project
and action.
Hey movie maniacs, and thank you for checking out the never been stoned. Well, I have been stoned, but never. I'm smoking.
Obviously, you've never been stoned. You make it sound like being stoned makes you sound like the Crypt Keeper.
I can't do a high-pitched giggle. There you go. There's a high-pitched giggle. But this is episode 420 of the Ellis's Analysis here on the Top 100 Project. 420 episodes. Wow. Every Monday, we post a review of old movies, usually classics. This may not be a classic, but it does fit the theme, and it is very funny. We'll be in spoiler mode today on Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle. By the way, last week, White Christmas, White Castle. So we're spoiling as we do every week. I'm the anal retentive number cruncher who has had one or two crushes on unattainable women, Ryan Ellis. And here's my much cooler sidekick who has two gay fathers. And who's never really been very extreme. My wife, Bev.
That's me.
I mixed a match there. You were Kumar. You're Tariq, the guy in prison, who gets arrested for having a weapon in his hand, which is not a gun, it's a book. And of course, you're the extreme punk guys. Okay, the coming attractions opinion question for Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle. Which food would you go through hell to get?
So, I'm a deeply lazy person, but I really have, in my life, gone on some adventures to get food late at night. It's been a while, but you know, I was in my 20s once. Sorry in advance for making this a very local reference, but there used to be this Indian roadie place in Toronto for decades called Gandhi's. It closed last year. It was at the corner of Queen and Bathurst for Torontonians who might know what I'm talking about. And if you told me there was one of their Saag Paneer roadies waiting on the other side for me, I would ride a cheetah across a freeway for that roadie. What about you?
It used to be KFC. I've mentioned this before on other podcasts. That's my fast food of choice, although I don't really eat it all that often. Partly because it just isn't as good as it used to be.
Yeah, we keep saying this. Did the KFC change or did we change?
I think that they changed.
Yeah, less flavorful.
So instead, I'm going to cheat a little bit and name my last meal foods. These have also probably been mentioned on this podcast before. But my last meal foods would include bacon, which we had a couple of hours ago today. Good donuts, fresh Italian bread, really good grapes, and lots of rye.
These are things that you generally enjoy with some frequency, except maybe bacon. We're Canadian. Let's eat more bacon.
I do have rye here, though, so I'm making it for that at least. We are not high. We're not even drunk. We're getting there. We're starting to get there. Still pretty early in the night. Okay. Nothing is worth what they go through in this movie.
Adventure is worth what they go through in this movie. What are you talking about? Well, stories for whatever they remember. It's funny, there's a point where they're in the car after they're leaving Freak Show's house, and they're like, let's never talk about this ever again, and Screen Junkies did their Everything Wrong with Harold and Kumar, and they're like, what do you mean never tell anyone? This is the greatest story ever! You should tell everybody for the rest of your life!
Excuse me, Screen Junkies and CinemaSins are different companies. Oops. On the internet.
I definitely mixed them all up.
I get your point, though. Okay, Dude, Where's My Burger? Was released by New Line Cinema on July 30th, 2004. If you don't get that Dude, Where's My Burger reference, you will soon.
I'm not stoned, so I get the reference. Okay.
Maybe our listeners don't. The film had a small budget, but it eked out a nice profit worldwide and had two sequels, both of which made more money than this did. Although the reviews weren't as good for those ones as this had from Rotten Tomatoes and so on. But Bev, the movie is 17 years old. So please remind us what it's about with the, what do we call it? Stoner brain here. Oh yeah, skinny.
It's 17, so it's a little bit older than their target viewer.
Maybe so.
Yeah. John Cho and Cal Penn are Harold and Kumar, two high-functioning stoners who are on a mission to kill their munchies at White Castle. But it's not so easy. First, the closest location is 45 minutes away. Then they have to make a detour for Morpaw. Then they get attacked by a raccoon, so they have to go to the hospital where they're mistaken for doctors. Back on their mission, they crash their car, and their gross tow truck driver tries to get them to sleep with his hot wife, so they split and pick up a hitchhiking Neil Patrick Harris who steals their car. They get arrested, break out of prison, ride a cheetah, steal a truck from some racist bullies, and finally take a hang glider on the final step of their odyssey to White Castle, where they eat the least appetizing meal ever presented in cinema.
I'm not so sure about that part, but you did miss out the best part of this whole movie, one of the funniest scenes of all time. I saw it for maybe the 40th time in my life, including YouTube views, where they sing along to Hold On. But we will talk about that later on in the podcast. Also, you mentioned Get the Munchies. A recent episode of Jeopardy pointed out that that was the original title of this movie, Harold and Kumar Get the Munchies. Also, on the commentary, John Cho talks about how it should be Kumar, not Kumar. The emphasis should be on the Mar part, but he admits that Harold and Kumar sounds better than Harold and Kumar. Kumar.
And they call him Kumar throughout the movie, right?
I think maybe if you listen closely, John Cho is saying it the way that John Cho says it should be said.
If you know even a handful of Indian people with Indian names, then you would know that it would be pronounced Kumar. That's how you would naturally want to pronounce it.
But he's right. It does sound cooler to say, or at least has a better flow. In any case. So the nutshell for Harold and Kumar. Ryan Reynolds plays a nurse.
That's it.
Do you want people to watch this movie? That's one big plug. Giant star who knew Cal Penn from the Van Wilder, I think just the first movie at that point. The sequel hasn't been made yet.
He wasn't a giant star back then.
No, that's the point. A giant star now is what I'm saying. There's a lot of people in this movie that were well-known or now are well-known. Anthony Anderson's got a small role as the Burger Shack employee. We covered him earlier this year in The Departed. Fred Willard, we all know him from many things, but of course Best in Show a couple years before this. We've covered that one before. Ethan Embry is the bass player in That Thing You Do. Not a big name, but still, I love that movie.
And he might be even more recognizable from Can't Hardly Wait. I think they were trying to play off of his good guy protagonist image by casting him on the top of the film as a little mislead that it's going to be about these two white guys, but then it ends up being about background characters, more or less.
And he's also a dick in his small role in this film. And then the background characters have background characters. Because Rosenberg and Goldstein are a play on Rosencrantz and Guildenstern from Hamlet.
And I heard that they were actually workshopping a script to make a movie about their adventures that go on in the background. And you can certainly believe it because you see them turn up here and there in the film and it does seem like they're having their own little adventure trying to get to the hot dog place.
Mm-hmm. And of course, that's David Krumholtz and Eddie K. Thomas. Eddie K. Thomas never became a big name. They're both in the sequels to this, by the way. Krumholtz has done a lot of films, but Eddie K. Thomas had been in, I think, at least two American Pie films, which were blockbusters, at least for the amount of budget they had. So anyway, the two stars were overshadowed by all these other people going in, yet they are the best things in the movie.
You haven't even mentioned the big one yet.
Maloney?
Well, he's a big
Malin
one,
Ackerman?
Too. No, come on. Neil Patrick Harris.
Oh, of course, yeah. The big surprise, because I didn't even watch Doogie Howser, but I knew who he was from that show. And then he is just polar opposite of what I knew from that show and this role. And that was the point. I also heard, I read online, that Ralph Macchio was an option.
He was
to play
their
backup. Character. And the funny thing about that is that he is now, of course, the star, or one of the two stars, of Cobra Kai. And the writers of this movie work on that.
Oh, yeah. That's their current project. Mm-hmm. That's cool.
But yeah, John Cho, who had been in small roles, really small roles, in Wag the Dog and American Beauty, which we've covered. Those are way back in our archives. And after this, of course, went on to do Star Trek. And then again, I guess before, the most famous thing he ever did was, this is the first time I ever heard this phrase, I think it's the first time anyone had ever said it in a movie, he's the MILF guy from American Pie. He says MILF, and what's that mean? She's a mom I'd like to fuck. And that's Jennifer Coolidge in American Pie.
Yeah, I remember rewatching American Pie years later and catching that scene. Oh my God, John Cho, he's the guy who says that. If you go back and watch the vintage trailer for Harold and Kumar, when they're introducing them, they go, starring the Asian guy from American Pie and the Indian guy from Van Wilder. Yeah. It's pretty funny.
And with that phrase being, Mom, I'd like to fuck, a recurring line more early on than as the whole movie goes on, but John Cho does say, fuck, 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 about a lot of things, because he has to work, can't get the parking spot he wants. He's a very frustrated young man. Much like the dude, not nearly as calm as a stoner is supposed to be. And he also, in this movie, takes way more abuse and humiliation than Kumar does.
Well, Kumar, people try to abuse him and humiliate him.
But he rises above.
Plus, he just doesn't care. Harold cares about his job, cares about being successful, cares about getting a girl and what people think, whereas Kumar could care less.
He's a go-with-the-flow kind of guy.
Beyond go-with-the-flow, he's almost anti-establishment. But then, of course, by the end of the movie, he just discovers, oh, because he performs a perfect surgery. He's not even a medical student. He's at best taken pre-med, I guess. He wouldn't have the first idea. Even somebody who graduated from medical school wouldn't know how to perform what he's performing, because you have to go through residency to just learn how to physically do what he's doing.
He's a prodigy.
Yeah, exactly. Even though he's high and could care less. Yeah. And then ask the patient how to get to White Castle, which is great.
Yeah, funny gag, because of course the guy is somehow lucid and gives him information. But his interview with Fred Willard, he both aces it and blows it, because all of his numbers are incredible and he's got a recommendation from his father and many other people probably. But then just blows it by taking a phone call in the interview and then also talking about, I want to be blazed to tell, whatever it was he says to Harold on the phone. Okay, I said that the sequels didn't have quite as good a ratings, although they're fine on Rotten Tomatoes. But this did get 74% of critics on its side. That's a pretty strong number on the strength of 149 reviews and 80% of audiences. And it's one of those movies I didn't see on the big screen. I saw a lot of movies back in this era, 2004, 2005, and so on. This one I skipped. I didn't recognize these two guys. I didn't really care. It looked like a lame movie from the poster and everything. Then I rented it, and of course we'll talk about the main reason why I love the movie. But I enjoyed the whole thing. The hold-on scene is what put me over the edge, though, to make me love the movie from that point on. It was also 110th at the 2004 U.S. box office. We have covered these three films. Well, you and I have covered two of these three. Spider-Man 2 was number 2. Fahrenheit 9/11 was 17th. And Million Dollar Baby, which Chris and I covered quite a few years ago for the Scoring at the Movies podcast series, was 24th. That, of course, won Best Picture. And none of those four movies have anything in common whatsoever, including Harold and Kumar. The reason I love this movie, though, of course, is the hold-on scene. But it also builds up so well. So that scene out of context is still very funny. But when they steal the truck and you hear, I didn't even know this until this viewing, that it's a dance version of one of the greatest dramatic, passionate love songs of all time. The dance version of Total Eclipse of the Heart. And then, of course, it's Baby, Baby. And even then, you can see the guys, this is pretty good. I don't mind this song. But then when it's Hold On, which was in Bridesmaids, we covered that at the beginning of the year. Wilson Phillips actually shows up to sing their song in that movie. And here we've got it on the radio, or I guess the tape. And these two guys, that whole, I don't mind this song. What does he think? Oh, he's into it a little bit too. And then that, someday somebody's gonna.
And you know, it's not really a fresh comedy idea, but the buildup in the way that they're playing along with the song, secretly liking it, and then slowly realizing that the other one is too, looking at each other for permission to just completely dig deep into their love for Hold On.
And they know the lyrics perfectly.
Yeah, that performance there is what totally sells that moment. Because otherwise, I don't know if it would be that special. It also is a great gag that the tape is in the truck that they steal from all of these...
They're posers.
The extreme, yeah, sport jerks.
Although those three songs, not so much the dance version of Total Eclipse of the Heart, but I like all three songs. Okay, anyway, deep into the podcast. What'd you think of the movie?
This is the first time I've ever actually watched it all the way through. I've seen bits and pieces. I definitely had seen the Neil Patrick Harris stuff at least. And I was always like, yeah, that movie, it's dumb. Who cares? But I loved it.
We laughed a lot.
It's so dumb, but it's really funny. It's bad, but it's great. It just made me feel like an idiot teenager a little bit. And by the time they are riding that cheetah, the one I keep bringing up, I'm just so in. Like, it makes me wish I was a bigger pothead.
Yeah, we didn't watch The Stone. We're not really smokers or tokers or any that kind of... I'm proving it right now.
Or midnight smokers. Or midnight...
Okay, there you go.
I can't even remember.
You do it sometimes. Midnight tokers. Edibles. I haven't had edibles in, I don't know, 2-3 years now. But I do like those.
Pot became legal here in Canada, what, 3 years ago? 4 years ago? And I was like, that's it. I'm really going to go for it. I'm really going to get into pot. And I bought some, and it's around here somewhere.
I've never smoked anything in my life. I'm not going to start with marijuana, although I guess it's probably healthier than cigarettes, but yeah. That's why I like the edibles.
We do like the edibles sometimes.
Well, I basically agree with what you just said, although I don't think it's as dumb as you say it is, because one of the reasons why I like this movie, when I rented it on DVD in late 2004, early 2005, is that I expected it to be stupid, but I'd heard a lot of things about it. I think the Salon Review, and that's a pretty reputable website, raved about how this movie actually can bring America together, because you've got, and there's that little scene by Kumar talking about, our parents came to this country, Harold. So you've got an Asian immigrant, well, son of immigrants, and then we do meet the father, another relatively well-known name in this country, at least Sean Majumber, plays...
That's his brother.
Kumar's brother, right.
Yeah, he's a Canadian celebrity, but I think he only got cast in this film because it was shot in Toronto, and so they have to cast Canadians to meet a certain standard. So it's fun when you're Canadian watching an American film that was shot in Toronto. You can play Find the Canadian.
Steve Braun plays Cole. He's the leader of the Extreme Punks. He's also Canadian. So anyway, when I actually saw the movie, I really did enjoy that underlying theme. Maybe I had read the review beforehand, I forget now, but the idea that these two guys are on a not so noble mission to do something that was still illegal in America in 2004, which is smoke pot.
Well, their mission is to go to White Castle.
Okay, whatever. You know what I'm saying, though. But they're also driving while stoned. Kumar does almost all the driving. And then, of course, the buzz wears off. The movie does take place over the course of many hours. They're probably seeing that commercial for White Castle at, let's say, 8 o'clock at night, maybe a little bit earlier in the night. And then they're out till dawn. So the movie is probably an 8 or 10 hour, well, 8. It's probably a 10 or 12 hour excursion. And it also is set on a Friday night into a Saturday morning because Harold is forced to work when Billy, who is the Ethan Embry character, makes him do his work for the big investor meeting they have the next day on a Saturday, interestingly. And Harold does do the work, but his laptop gets destroyed, so all that goes out the window. But then the two guys who should have done the work in the first place, I guess specifically Billy, it's his buddy JD who tells him, no, put it on the Asian kid, let's go. So JD's not going to be punished, but Billy probably will be by their boss.
Right. You're kind of making the case for saying this movie is more important than it looks on the surface. It's like a dumb movie, but it actually did do something special at the time. And I totally agree. In 2004, honestly, when did you ever see an Asian lead outside of a kung fu movie?
Or the year before, it was mentioned in this movie, actually, the title of it, Better Luck Tomorrow. John Cho is in that. But that's also, I think, an Asian-made movie. This is basically a boring old American filmmaking company with two people that would normally not get cast in lead roles by boring old white people in Hollywood.
Yeah, there was Jackie Chan, and that was it. Maybe the Joy Luck Club back in the 90s, but that was it for movies starring Asian actors. And maybe you could do better than me, but I can only think of one English language film starring a South Asian actor from around this time, and it was Bend It Like Beckham. I couldn't think of a single other example of an English language film, obviously not a Bollywood film. It just couldn't come to me.
Nothing's coming to mind for me either. Mm. That's my point. You'll find a Better Luck Tomorrow type film, but it's Asian filmmakers making it. So, of course, you're going to have Asian actors in that.
For and an
that
Asian wasn't... audience, too. Yes. This was a for everybody.
Battle Royale crossed over.
And it's in Japanese, too. It's a Japanese film. Beyond just providing any representation of Asian Americans outside of sidekicks or stereotypes, Harold and Kumar really do a great job of bucking that cliche of the Asian model minority who just keeps their head down and stays out of trouble. They literally address it right from the first scene with that fake out, the false start where his boss or whoever is like, you gotta do this work for me, you know. Asian guys, they live to crunch numbers because they believe this stereotype, and it's obviously not true just because he's Asian. But instead, we get this really universally relatable story about two dudes in their 20s who care about work, but still like to party and go on adventures just like anyone else, and who get to be the lead of their own story. And it doesn't either remotely erase the fact that they're Korean and Indian. This wasn't colorblind casting. The parts were written that way. The writers wanted to make a movie that represented their friends, like the people they actually saw in New Jersey. The writers were Jewish. Oh, well, they have pretty Jewish names.
John Hurwitzen, Hayden Schlossberg.
Yeah, and they directly based the character of Harold on a friend of theirs named Harold Lee. And they knew Indian people and Asian people, and it feels believable in that sense, because we grew up more or less adjacent to a town that had a lot of diversity, and it feels accurate. It feels like that first-generation experience to me.
And these guys seem that they'd be fun to hang out with as well, which is one of the best things about the movie. I think it's one reason why I liked it so quickly into watching it on DVD that time, the very first time, is because these guys are fun. Harold obviously is stressed out a lot more than Kumar ever will be. But they capture me right away with their likability. The director, by the way, we haven't said his name yet. Denny, I think it's pronounced Liner, who died of lung cancer 3 years ago.
Oh,
which is why he didn't get me. But I said the joke title was, Dude, Where's My Burger? Well, this is the guy who directed Dude, Where's My Car? And then did a lot of TV as well.
They actually say, Dude, Where's My Car? Mm-hmm. When their car gets sold.
When I first saw this, Patrick I didn't recognize Harris. That reference at all. But that is funny when they say that to NPH, yeah. Well, actually, you talk about diversity. You look at Cho and Penn. We just talked about them being diverse. But Paula Garces, who plays the love interest, she's born in Colombia. Krumholtz and Eddie K. Thomas are playing Jewish characters, but over the top. A lot of Jewish actors in movies over the years, many, 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 but not usually quite as obvious as these guys. Also, NPH, I don't know if we knew at that time, maybe Hollywood did, I don't think he was out yet, but here's a guy who's gay, or certainly was sometime after this, publicly.
He wasn't out at this time. Okay. It's funny, this movie has tons of homophobia in it.
Standard
for the time. This was 2004. If you go back to 2014, you're going to find that comedies are front to back with lots of homophobia, gay panic, all kinds of stuff like that.
Especially with Rosencrantz and Rosenberg and Goldstein. The four of them, when they're talking briefly, I think there's probably two or three homophobic references in maybe 20 seconds.
But even Harold and Kumar, they make gay jokes themselves. And so the movie's definitely trying to say it's okay. And then so how funny that years later,
just recently,
two of the main characters have come out as gay, both Neil Patrick Harris and more recently Cal Penn.
Yeah, Cal Penn is within the last month or two that he actually said he's gay. Cal Penn's credits are fascinating because he worked in Obama's White House. And of course, maybe the best thing for him is House on TV and these three Harold and Kumar movies as well. He has got so much charisma. He's got a lot of likability in him, even though you can understand why Harold wants to slug him in the middle of the night and instead hits the cop. That's a fun scene too. There's some really great touches in this movie that you maybe forget till you watch it in sequence. When Harold wants to go over to the phone booth, and it's probably 2 a.m, and there's nobody around, but he will not jaywalk. And then what he does is a cop who was not there.
Immediately there.
Just right there. And of course, the funny gag that killed us both, because they both have a fantasy sequence towards the end of the film, but Kumar's fantasy sequence is with the bag of marijuana, the giant bag of weed, and he has a whole relationship with the thing. But the best part about that is that his fantasy gets to be so dark and sad.
His relationship with the bag of weed goes sour, and he smacks her.
So you bitch! It's so I'm sorry, I didn't mean it.
The movie gets so weird by the end, but I was thinking about this. The weird stuff is my favorite stuff in the movie, but I love how they really build up to it. It starts very grounded, and then by the end, by the time you've really bought into everything, it has that sequence, and then it has the weird animated fantasy sequence after they ride the cheetah.
Well, because Harold gets knocked out, he imagines
Yeah, and he has this almost psychedelic style. I tried to find it on YouTube, and I couldn't, which is such a shame, because it was my favorite. And then it sets you up for that cliche gag, where his love interest starts licking his face, and you're like, oh, he's going to wake up, and the cheetah or dog or something's going to be licking his face, but it's Kuma.
And he says, if I did some gay shit, I thought maybe you'd wake up. So there's a reference to something. That's not so good.
Such a great little reversal of expectations there.
Well, we know that Cal Penn is one of the many people that was not happy with the Apu character from The Simpsons. And he does have the line, thank you, come again, which the punks had said earlier to him, racistly. And now he's saying it as an up yours to them. Since we know how he feels about that line and the way that Apu was portrayed all those years on The Simpsons, not anymore at least, I wonder how he feels about what he had to say and do in this movie.
But he's saying it as a fuck you to those guys.
I mean the gay stuff. About him literally saying, if I did gay shit to you, maybe that would wake you up.
Yeah. That's got to be the experience of every closeted gay person, especially gay men. I don't feel like women have to deal with this shit. They don't have gay panic the way that men have gay panic, but that's how you stay in the closet, is probably by just going headfirst into all those cliche gay panic jokes.
There's also some objectification of Katie Holmes early on in the film. These guys are only watching The Gift, which is a pretty decent movie, actually. One of the surprising performances from Keanu Reeves in that as a villain. So that's also something that's not so much fun, but they don't show it. It's just these guys talking about it. So yeah.
You do see boobs, the strippers.
No, but we don't see Katie Holmes, though. We don't see The Gift. No. They're talking about watching the movie.
This is not a movie with strong female characters, by any stretch of the imagination.
But
the love interest has no personality outside of being desirable. She barely speaks. We learn vaguely, she also likes John Hughes movies, just because we see her looking at a poster. She has no personality. She's just a prize for him to win at the end of the movie. you have the throwaway Korean girl who is too needy and he doesn't like her. Even though she's very
so cute.
She's so cute. It seems like they're fun. Mm-hmm. I like that touch that there's the group of Korean friends, because that's another thing I always knew about growing up with friends who were Indian or Korean or Chinese, that they would have their friends at school, but then they would have these separate groups of really tight friends because all their parents hung out together or they belonged to the same Chinese school or whatever they attended outside of school, and they really would live in these separate worlds, have these little groups.
I'm never entirely sure, but I think I heard the line in this viewing that the guy who says, "Who wants some Buddha?" when they're all partying is the guy who was putting up his hand in their little meeting. "Ooh, Harold over here, question over here." If it's not the same guy, he looks like the same guy. And that would be a fun thing, that when they all get down and start partying, he's not the nerdy guy asking questions. He's the one that's leading the party.
Right.
So even if that isn't him, and I think it's supposed to be, that guy is a fun dude. And obviously they should just stay at Princeton. Forget White Castle. You get food there in some way and have fun with those guys. But that's not the movie they're making.
Be a different movie.
And as far as Maria goes, one of the more important things about her character, so it isn't entirely unearned at the end that Harold gets her to kiss him, is that when you see early on when he will not say a word to her because he's terrified, and who can blame him? She is stunning. When they go up in the elevator, she's the one that says, "Bye." So she's going out of her way. She's not completely blowing him off.
No, she sells it at the beginning of the movie.
But she's interested
in him
back.
She likes him too. She thinks he's cute. She's just dying for him to talk to her. So by the end of the movie, when he's earned his confidence, and he finally talks to her, that she like immediately kisses him.
Bloody, torn up, dirty, all that stuff at the end. He looks, I'll say it, quite sexy. He looks far sexier then than he does early on.
That is definitely true. But kissing somebody who just had fast food burgers? Disgusting. He must have stank so bad after everything that they'd been through.
And then the burgers.
That would just put it over the edge.
And eventually they get married. I think it's the third movie, because the second one they go to Guantanamo Bay. They get thrown into Guantanamo Bay trying to get to Amsterdam to see Maria. But then the third movie, a very Harold and Kumar Christmas, Harold has married her. There are two things in this movie I could really do without, though. One is the battleships scene, the two English girls.
You hate that stuff.
Not really a big fan of that kind of thing.
Did you like that stuff when you were a teenager? Because that's really the audience for that kind of thing. Did you ever, when you were younger, like poop jokes?
When I was that age, I don't think they were so common in the 80s. If they were, I can't think of an example of this.
Dumb and Dumber. When you saw Dumb and Dumber.
I was 20.
Okay, did you find that scene funny? Come on, go out on a limb with me. Use your imagination.
It's not using, apparently, the actual sounds from a truck stop of actual truckers shitting in the bowl. They don't do that in Dumb and Dumber.
That the Dumb and Dumber diarrhea scene is less graphic than Battleships.
I think Battleships is more graphic.
Oh,
because of the sound alone.
No way. Come on, there is disgusting noises in Dumb and Dumber. That scene is notoriously one of the most repulsive diarrhea scenes.
I don't
want to
dwell on
the
scene in the first place, because I don't really think it needs to be in the movie in the first place at all.
If you tell me that never in your entire life have you found that kind of stuff funny, I will believe you, but it seems like you're dodging the question here.
I guess it can be funny. I don't think it really needs to be in this movie. Just like I don't think the freak show stuff needs to be in the movie.
Yeah, the freak show stuff is overkill for me. I feel like the pus and the throbbing boil. Yeah.
There are some laughs in that, though, because when they're whispering to each other, and there's no way this guy can't hear them, but then I think it's Kumar says that there's stuff in his ear, he can't hear us anyway, and they have that wide shot of the three of them in the truck. Seconds go by. I heard everything you guys said. And the other laugh in that whole sequence is when Malin Ackerman, well, I guess when he says, "You can fuck my wife." Did I hear that right? But then when it pays off and she says, "You can fuck me or what?" And Malin Ackerman, for all of her faults as an actress, is beautiful to look at. And they would have got to if they were willing to do a foursome.
With Freak Show.
And he was going to be doing something to them, not just part of it. He was going to want something from them, if you will.
Well, foursome with three guys and one girl. You better be a little open-minded if you're going to do something like
more
that.
More gay panic, though.
Yeah. Or pus panic. Whether you're gay or not, you're not going to want to touch that guy. Apparently, Christopher Maloney was their first choice. Mm-hmm. And then he was really surprised to hear this. And actually, I don't know how real it was, but he's like, "Really? Me, guys? That's who you thought of? Me?" And he took it a little personally.
Well, and of course, he's known for being a sex symbol on Law and Order for all the years he's been on that show. I think before this movie, right? And then certainly since.
When did he start being on Law and Order? I always remembered him from Oz, which is a very different role. But I never watched Law and Order SVU, so I never know him as that part.
The one thing that is fun, though, too, is that he just shows up out of nowhere. He has no reason to know they're there, but he does anyway.
Kind of like the cop busting them for jaywalking. Mm-hmm. He's just instantly there.
Jamie Kennedy peeing on a bush. We've seen him recently, too, because we covered Scream a few months ago. But why you gotta pee on this bush? You think you own this bush, wherever the line is he has? So another guy who's a pretty big name in 2004 in a very small, uncredited role. As far as NPH goes, he's even saying things I'd never heard before this movie. Trippin' balls and...
You never heard trippin'
balls?
High
as balls. I don't think I'd ever had before this movie.
He really nails what it's like to watch somebody be high on ecstasy.
Well, even the like jaw thing, jaw, yeah.
It's pretty realistic in the way he seems both hyper-focused and zoned out at the same time. Truly to us, he was Doogie Howser. I know you didn't watch that show, but you knew he had this really squeaky clean, adorable image. It would be as if the kid from Modern Family that everybody loves suddenly did a movie like this where they were rude and crass and the swearing and...
Hookers and blow.
Hookers and blow and everything. And it was such a departure and he sells it. So I was like, no way is it going to be that good. It was still really funny. He's so committed to it.
Yeah.
It really hasn't aged poorly at all.
It's one of the great cameos, if you want to call it an extended cameo of all time. And there's even some smart writing by Hurwitz and Schlossberg by having them talk about White Castle so much to him in the car. So that's how he ends up being at that White Castle. And that's the only reason why they'd have their car be there, because he went to the same place. You could just have it, hey, magically was there. And no one would really dwell on it after all we've seen in this crazy movie. But it actually makes logical sense when they mention White Castle, White Castle, White Castle. And he also, in a different kind of way, is high on stuff. So now he wants some food. He's got the munchies.
I don't think ecstasy gives you the munchies, though.
Oh, okay.
Those kinds of drugs mean you can go like a whole day without eating, without even thinking about it.
Ah, okay.
But it works fine for the movie that he ends up at White Castle.
So another reason why this movie has some depth, though, too, of course, is Tariq in jail when he says he has two gay fathers. I used that in your intro earlier on. But he also has that line, and this is what finally calms Harold down when Harold remembers him saying it. The universe tends to unfold as it should. In other words, just calm down and let it happen. They've already arrested him for doing nothing. And then when he's in the jail cell, he's got a weapon. It's a book. So this poor guy's getting harassed again. Although we do see that payoff at the end with the two gay fathers. And I guess they're suing the cops and everything. But that's another thing that has really come to fruition in more recent years. This guy is in no way a threat to anybody. Seems like a sweetheart of a dude, too. And he's in jail for nothing. I'm actually impressed that these white guys would have thought to put this character in the movie, except for maybe a comedy thing. But they're not mocking him. They like him.
Yeah, they're mocking the police. All the cops in this movie are racist jerks.
Right. And terrible at their job.
Yeah.
But I do like the fact that Harold hears that line again later on, and that's when he realizes, oh, Zen, including that thing at the end with unfinished business. What? Unfinished business. Maria! Let's go back to Maria and get Maria! John Cho's like a whole different character in the maybe last 20 minutes of this movie than he has through most of it.
Because he experiences growth, Ryan.
But it's because
his character has an arc.
Hearing what Tariq said to him earlier in the night.
It's because he's done all these things and he's come out the other side and he finds his confidence.
Yeah, just like stealing the punk's truck and then telling off his, I guess, supervisor, not so much his boss, Ethan Embry.
Still can't tell off Kumar, who is a terrible friend.
How did these guys ever live together? Because Kumar is such a slob and Harold is like I am, very anal retentive about the way he lives his life. They have their own rooms. Okay, fine. Although Kumar is cutting his pubes in Harold's room.
And he cuts his butt hair with the scissors, too. Congratulations, sir. How do you do that? How do you cut your butt hair
Teach
with a pair
me.
Of scissors?
But anyway, how do these guys ever really function day to day? Because they are so opposite. At least in that one area of cleanliness.
And Kumar isn't just a well-meaning slob. He's a terrible friend. He is very selfish, and he will throw Harold under the bus. Dumb things like ducking so that the cop gets hit or lying to him about knowing how to ride a hang glider.
Mm-hmm.
All throughout the movie, he is terrible to Harold.
Even things like getting rid of the spare tire in the car because he was messing around with
Goldstein. Yes, that's right.
It's like, not his
he's
car.
He's the worst and he's not sorry. There's no contrition. He doesn't have an arc where he becomes a better friend. His whole arc is just that he realizes, okay, fine, I'll be a doctor. Sir, I don't care how much of a prodigy you are, you would make a terrible doctor.
I think in the third movie, the Christmas one, that Harold has grown away from Kumar, maybe because of things like this. I guess I should have watched it. I could have actually spoken intelligently.
We should watch Harold and Kumar Christmas.
We can report later in a future podcast. This is what we thought about very Harold and Kumar Christmas. Now, as for Hold On, getting back to that for one brief moment, I forgot to mention this earlier. If you hold on for one more day, things will go your way. Badly sung. But Harold has to hold on, and things are going to go his way. So he's hearing Tariq's advice about let the universe unfold as it should, and also he's hearing Wilson Phillips' advice.
All right, I'll give it to you.
What a great song. I love Hold On. And also a pretty nice tie-in to have the skateboard punks get picked up for the giant bag of weed that's in their truck.
Which Kumar would never have left in that truck. He would have found a way to bring it on the hang glider.
Pretty sloppy, but then those guys are screwed.
Yeah.
But that does lead me to what happens next, although I suppose this may not be true, but you have to discount there are sequels, so we'll pretend there aren't sequels for a minute. So what happens next? The jerks at work find a way to make Harold's life even more miserable than it was before, although he did call their bluff. So maybe they'll lay off him, possibly. Maybe JD especially, because he is the bad influence on Billy. It's Rob Tinkler, who is the Kumar of that group. He's the one saying, yeah, give it to the Asian guy. That wasn't Billy's idea, Ethan Embry. That was Tinkler.
Yeah, that whole ending is kind of a comeuppance fantasy.
Mm-hmm. But as far as what happens next, the other thing is that the skateboard punks are going to get revenge. They're going to jail, probably. But when they get out of jail, they're going to get revenge on Harold and Kumar. Stealing the truck alone, let alone they got set up.
They won't have any trouble finding Harold and Kumar because everywhere Harold and Kumar go, the extreme punks are there already.
Magically, yeah.
Yeah.
So you mentioned Liner did, I think, a pretty good job of directing this movie, although Dude, Where's My Car? I didn't see that till years later. It was pretty dumb. I'll never watch it again.
It's not like it's artfully directed. It's just funny.
Harold and Kumar.
Yeah.
But he did make a funny movie, and that is not easy to do.
Good story,
a movie that remains funny after all these years as well. And, of course, credit to Hurwitz and Schlossberg and the stars. The producers, Nathan Kahane, who worked on the sequels and was an executive producer on Young Adult, which we covered earlier this year, and Greg Shapiro, who was a producer on The Hurt Locker, of all things, 5 years after this film came out. The film is 185:1. We saw it on Stars, although we do have the DVD. Cinematographer Bruce Douglas Johnson shot Happy Texas and then also Everwood on TV. The editor, Jeff Betancourt, did some comedies, but also a lot of horror, including The Grudge and The Grudge 2. So the first one, meaning the American remake, was, I believe, the same year as this. That was a big year for this guy.
I feel like being good at cutting comedy and being good at cutting horror probably come from the same well of talent.
Yep,
I agree. Because you really have to be an absolute prodigy at pacing to get those things great.
Timing in comedy and horror is more key than it is in any other genre. And the composer, David Kitay, worked on Clueless, Ghost World, and Bad Santa, all of which we've covered, all of which are funny films too. So he's either lucked into some or helped out with some great comedies in that span of time. What do you think of the look? We just mentioned the cutting, but then the music. Music, I don't remember at all except for the songs.
Yeah, yeah. It feels like a low-budget comedy.
Yeah, which is what
it
was.
The special effects are just good enough. The cinematography is just good enough. We're truly talking almost TV level of production. You can tell that a lot of choices they made were probably more motivated by budget than by artistry and by knowing what you're doing and knowing where to put your focus. Maybe it's more important to spend money on the pus oozing from Freakshow's boil than great production design in their apartment.
Would you watch this movie stoned?
Because fuck yes. Are you kidding?
But here's the reason I asked that. Because they go through such a stressful adventure that it would be hard to enjoy it the same way. I think I'd already mentioned the dude in The Big Lebowski doesn't really get a chance to truly be the dude we always think of because of the things he has to go through.
Okay.
Well, that's Harold in this movie especially, but even Kumar.
But when you're watching this movie, are you stressed out for them? Are you worried?
No, neither does Lebowski, but some dangerous stuff happens to the people in both of those films.
Yeah, but it's just so silly in its tone that you always know they're going to be okay. So it's all just adventures, and there's so much non sequitur stuff going on from scene to scene. I feel like this would be an amazing movie to watch high.
Okay. We did not. We probably should have. I said, by the way, in the nutshell, that Ryan Reynolds is the reason to watch this. He plays a nurse. He's become such a megastar. He had a big year in 2021, because he was in Red Notice, which is getting talked about a lot lately on Netflix. Apparently the most popular movie ever on that site. And of course, Free Guy. And he did something else this year. What was the third thing? Anyway. And he's
true
got
story.
Such a small role. But he's got such a small role in this movie. And who knew he'd become such a big star? This is back in the time frame when I was not a fan of him or Paul Rudd. Because I didn't think Paul Rudd was good on Friends, and I did not like Ryan Reynolds being such a snarky asshole in some of the movies he was in, including especially Van Wilder. I did not like that movie. I hated him in that movie, and I didn't love him in this, even now knowing what I like about him. Same with Rudd. If I were to rewatch Friends, I think I would still think, he's not funny. And I know he can be. Obviously, I've loved Rudd in most things he's done. But anyway, so this is the time frame when I didn't think either one of those guys was very good. And now they're both such megastars. And I do like what they do now, but I didn't like Reynolds back in this time frame. So last thoughts on Harold and Kumar go to White Castle. And oh, by the way, we didn't say, apparently the original idea was they go to Krispy Kreme. But Krispy Kreme didn't want to pay for that. Or they want to be associated with the pot movie is what it really was.
And White Castle benefited from this. Their sales went way up after this movie came out. So this movie was great for White Castle and Neil Patrick Harris.
And who would want to eat 30 donuts after, and well, maybe you would, I guess, after a night like that, but 30 sliders apiece, and then a bunch of fries and some Cokes.
A disgusting amount of repulsive food.
They'd be vomiting, even with those little sliders.
So I just want to express a word of appreciation for good, dumb movies that really get what they are, and just want to make you laugh for a tight 90 minutes. I think it's an 88-minute film. Kudos. And it must be a lot harder to make than we realize, because there's so many bad ones, but good for the ones that get it right.
What? Lost my train of thought there. I don't play a very good stoner, I know. I play a drunk guy better than a stoner. I know that very well. I don't know the stoner thing.
I know. We're such squares. Why are we talking about this movie?
We live in a country that has free pot, and we've never actually bought any since that became the law.
No, I did buy some. I just haven't smoked.
All right, yeah, you bought it. That's right.
I smoked a little bit of it.
Yeah, I do find these two guys effortlessly appealing, and they'd be fun to hang out with, I think. And then John Cho has a pretty great arc in this, too. Comes awfully cool and finally taking charge, telling off his supervisor and getting the girl. Not really putting Kumar in his place, though, like he should.
Yeah, that's maybe the last thing that could have happened.
I think that does happen in the third film. Well, we'll find out. We'll watch it in the next couple of weeks. In 7 days, Christmas will be less than a week away, so let's cover our second holiday movie this month. It's never been a favorite of mine, but it is a favorite of many other people. Scrooged, directed by Richard Donner. So the coming attractions opinion question. Richard Donner directed so many different types of movies. He did horror and The Omen, which we've covered. Superman, of course, was a superhero flick. He did action comedy in the Lethal Weapon franchise, which now apparently Mel Gibson is going to start directing in the fifth one. Donner's dead, by the way, so he can't direct the fifth one or anything else. He worked with a big cast of kids in the comedy adventure picture The Goonies, another favorite of mine when I was a kid. He even did a Western, Maverick, and he did a fantasy period piece, Lady Hawk. Which do you think he was best at of all those types of genres and all those types of movies?
All right, so for our answers to that question, check out next week's podcast about Scrooge. Oh, and I have to add, Scrooge stars Bill Murray, who maybe does the second best or in competition for the best cameo as himself in cinema history against Neil Patrick Harris and Zombieland. Bill Murray in Zombieland. So yes, check out next week's episode about Scrooge. Go to our website, top100project.com. Don't forget to favorite or subscribe to us wherever you listen. All of our episodes are available for free, and that includes all 123 movies that made the AFI's 1998 and or 2007 lists of the best American films ever made, but hundreds more titles on top of that. 420 in total, to be exact.
Whoa.
And far out. In exchange for all this great content, please leave us a rating and a review. We're both on Twitter. I'm at Bev Ellis Ellis, and Ryan is at MovieFiend51. You can also reach us by email, top100projectpodcast@gmail.com. And to enjoy freshly roasted premium coffee delivered straight to you in Canada or the US, please go to sparkplugcoffee.com and use the promo code TOP100PROJECT. That's all one word, TOP100PROJECT. It's not case sensitive, and that will get you a 20% discount just in time for Christmas, people.
Stocking stuffers. Well, it's time for me to buy an adding machine and a tank top while you put on a pink robe and turn into a giant bag of weed. Bitch! And then we can hold down for one more day. Things will go our way. Oh, things will go our way.
Hold on for one more day. And cut.